Here's what you're going to understand by the end of this episode. Why the capitalization phase is the foundation for your entire system. Why the people who push through the capitalization phase are who this system is designed for. And why Nelson Nash himself said that starting your infinite banking system is just like starting a new business. A business that's guaranteed to succeed.
Nelson Nash said, if you know what's going on, then you'll know what to do. And here's what you miss if you don't listen. You'll keep measuring this system the way the financial industry wants you to measure it and how they taught you to measure everything by what it's doing right now. And you'll miss the entire point.
This is a mindset episode, and it might be the one that saves your entire financial system. Let's get into it.
Hey, welcome back for part two.
Here we are. We were just talking about working out, how to increase our testosterone levels, because you know, our producer here is a health coach, so he can guide us on becoming more manly as we get older, maintaining those levels. The problem is, the problem is, Paul, you said, hey, the doctor said my testosterone is normal, which is not a great thing, right? We want optimal. I don't want normal. Right. I don't care what normal is. Right. Just like when we talk about, hey, the average American. Well, guess who are, you know, if you're listening right now, you're probably not the average American.
You don't care
about the average American. I don't care about the normal testosterone range for the dad that doesn't do anything. He just works and then sits on his butt when he gets home, right? I want what's the optimal testosterone range?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I like to say that's how we design policies is we optimally design the policy. And fund them, optimally designed and funded, but it really depends on what you need. What's optimal to you may not be what's optimal to your neighbor, right? Because you're in two different places in life, maybe two different incomes, two different needs for an estate, your children are different ages, you're married, you're single, whatever it may be. Like it's all completely different. The one thing that everybody does have in common is this capitalization phase, because that's the nature of the business. When you get into the banking business, you gotta spend some years capitalizing. And frankly, we spend every single year capital. Like I've been capitalizing some policies for 16 years, and I never intend to stop capitalizing. But why don't you give everybody like a refresher on what the, you know, that capitalization phase that Nelson talks about really is.
Yeah, what Nelson's referring to is the startup costs of your banking business, right? And a simple way to look at it is that, you know, in the first few years, you're going to have some access to cash value, but that it depends on how you fund it. But what he's talking about generally is just, hey, you're building a system here. It's going to take time to build this system. And he's just trying to get you to think beyond tomorrow, right? Every dollar you pay in premium is not going to have an equivalent, you know, cash value right out of the gate. It will shortly, though, right? And in over your entire period of, you know, working, let's say you work 40 years, 50 years, over that period of time, compared to that, it's a very small number of years that the capitalization phase is going to occur. And it's different for everybody, right? Some people have existing cash reserves where we can design that in for max liquidity, right? So you're not sacrificing as much liquidity. Some people have to start out their premium on a monthly basis because that's all they have. Hey, Paul, I have $500 a month that I can save. Great, right? So your capitalization phase is going to be a little bit longer, but it's going to be different for everybody. It's just, I think the overall theme here is just don't expect to have, you know, all of the cash value on day one, because you're not, right? You're starting a banking system or a business from scratch. That's the way to look at this. It's going to take a few years.
Yep. So
just have some patience, but it's going to be great.
Yeah. And if you're getting into this episode, you haven't listened to episode one last week, go back and check that episode out. For a little better context and some more information on what we're jumping into the middle of right here, which is this capitalization phase. You know, and there are people who just simply can't get over the idea of having to capitalize. And they've got all types of different reasons or objections, as we might call them, for for not getting started. What's interesting is I mean, how many people do you talk to every week where one of the things they say is, man, I wish somebody would have told me about this 20 years ago? Or this one I hear all the time actually is, you know, somebody mentioned to this to me, or this concept or this strategy about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, I even got this book and I never read it. Right. But somebody else told me about it just recently and it sparked my interest again. So now here I am. I've read the book. I'm ready to go. Man, I wish I would have done this 10 years ago.
Hear it all the time.
Yeah.
I would say I've heard it probably 50% of the time. Over, you know, 400, 500 conversations that I've had. And the people that are saying it, of course, are all the ones that become clients, right? They go through and they begin practicing IBC. It's very, very common. And the one where people come back, yeah, I got this book 10 years ago, I never read it. And then they come back and like, man, I'm kicking myself. And it happens all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. But the second best time to plant a tree is today. As they say.
That's right.
Right. We talked about trees last episode, Nelson Nash being a forester, which I don't think I've ever met a forester in real life other than Nelson. Like that's a very unique business.
The farthest I can say is an arborist.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're not so concerned with, their livelihood isn't, growing trees for 20 years and then replacing them. Right.
They're really concerned about a particular tree.
Yeah.
Generally, like, oh, let's cut this limb off to, you know, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah. So one of the reasons, I mean, one of the biggest objections people have with this is, I could be funding this dividend paying whole life insurance policy, or I could put my money somewhere that's going to start earning for me today. Which most people look at the stock market.
Right.
As that, you know, what's the problem, the biggest perception that somebody has wrong when they're bringing up that objective or objection?
Well, they're confusing investing and capitalizing. They're not the same thing. This is not an investment strategy. This is a create my own financing system strategy. So it's two different things. And the one thing I've heard a real estate guy that I talked to, he's a retired Marine guy, but he was like, yeah, I just can't get over the opportunity cost. And I'm like, you've got all your money locked up for the next 7 to 10 years before your sale or refinancing event. What are you talking about? Like, that's money that you can't do anything with because, you know, it's, you know, A or B shares or whatever the heck it is, right? I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, they don't understand that we can really make the policies very liquid. Anyways, you know, the market, the stock markets, that's where money goes to make money. Life insurance contracts create money where none existed before. And I think that's a stark difference.
Huge. Right. But eventually, the great thing about these is eventually your money will be making more money inside the policy. Like you'll have more through the growth than you ever put into it in the first place. And you'll still have a growing estate in the form of a income tax-free death benefit that continues to grow and will be there when you're no longer there.
Yeah. I firmly believe this, and this is true for us and our clientele, especially our most astute clientele, I would say, that are really kind of nerd out on this, is that whenever something major occurs in your financial life, whether it's you're going to replace the air conditioning system or systems if you have two of them in your home, or replace a car or whatever, whenever that event occurs, the money that's going to pay for that should be coming from your dividend paying whole life insurance policy or system of policies. And then when you are going to replenish, right, that's just simply repaying back the policy loan. So all that money should, and again, we've talked about it, you get clients with, they're putting money somewhere else, right? They've got this like other emergency fund or something. And of course, that's suboptimal. They will be wealthier if it were all in a dividend paying whole life insurance contract. It won't even be close.
Yeah. So we use those terms again. Maybe stop thinking about what's the average person doing. And maybe I should, if you want to be average, do what the average are doing. But maybe the question should be, what's the most optimal thing I can be doing? And optimal, again, has different meanings for different people based on your situation. Some people, optimal might be storing capital for a big purchase they have coming up in the future. Other people, optimal might be preserving the cash that they've accrued and accumulated over their lifetime and maybe protecting it from being taxed later on when, you know, they get to those passive income years, otherwise known as retirement years, where you have no idea what the tax brackets are going to be or what the tax rate is or how much actual income you'll be making. Like all of those unknowns. So again, optimal is what's optimal to you in your life right now, and what's going to be optimal down the road.
Well, I'll tell you very simply, you're not going to complain about when you think about the money you would have lost. This is a good exercise I think some of our clients that have been with us for several years now could do. But when you think about all that money that you would have lost because you just sent it from your checking or savings account to do that one thing, and now it's gone, right? Bought a car, or replaced an air conditioner, whatever, as opposed to passing it through now your own financing system where those dollars are now continuing to work for you even as you pay back that policy loan over a period of time. It'd be a good, interesting thing. Of course, the amount of money is going to be bigger and bigger and bigger every single year because you are now controlling more and more of the banking function, and you're not losing that money anymore that otherwise would have been just did one thing and it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes we'll hear from clients maybe a couple years in, we run some in-force illustrations and kind of show them how everything is working right now. And they may say, well, hey, it's not really working like I expected it to. And what I discover typically is what they expected was how we designed the policy in the first place to optimally fund it, to fully fund it, to take loans out and repay loans, be honest banker like we did, you know, just a couple episodes ago, play honest banker and not just carry outstanding loans that are accruing interest with no plan to repay. So what I find is when I'm able to point this stuff out, I'm like, your policy is doing actually better more often than not because dividend rates have gone up over the last few years. Your policy is actually performing better. It's you that's underperforming.
You are the problem.
You are the problem. You are underperforming. And that's not always an easy conversation, but people usually get it. They're like, yeah, I didn't fund all the PUA. I did take a big loan and I didn't pay it back and I haven't paid it back. I've got money sitting in the savings account over here for some reason. I haven't paid it back. So yeah, it becomes pretty self-evident on why the system isn't, quote, working like they thought it would. When you point out that, like we always say, the number one determining factor in how this system works in your life is you, period.
That's right. Yep. Nelson said that, and you know, we repeat it pretty often. How you treat your system matters most. People get caught up in which company do you like and all this crap and non-direct, direct recognition and PUA and base ratios.
Yeah.
Honestly, none of that matters that much. It's you that matters the most.
Right. And probably the most important thing is, are you able to think long range? And are you able to get through the capitalization phase, those first few years where, hey, it's lean. It may be leaner than of course, if you had your money sitting in a liquid savings account, you may have access to more at that point in the first few years. But very soon, you're going to see it grow. You're going to see it build on itself, and more will become available to you than you ever put in.
Yeah, I think if you're listening and if you're one of those people that, you know, we've had people come to these conclusions on their own, but they stop their 401k contributions. Dave has a little article out there about why he quit his 401k on LinkedIn somewhere, I think. You know, and I did the same thing, obviously, as a family we did. So I think the way I looked at it is I was putting money that otherwise I was putting in jail I was giving it freedom. And I was like, wow, I'm going to be able to touch all of this money I'd been socking away is now going to be money that I can control, right? And I am controlling it. And now I'm just over the hump of the capitalization phase of those first five or six policies, right? Where every dollar is making well more than a dollar of cash. So it's, I just don't care about any of that.
I don't look at it as lost access to capital. It's delayed access to some of my capital, but I see what I'm able to do with it right now. I'm able to continue to allow that money to grow even while I'm using it to go finance the things of life. There is no lost opportunity cost in the sense that that dollar is gone forever. That dollar is, in fact, going to be working for me forever.
It's a very, I don't know if acute or just short-term sacrifice of some liquidity, not all liquidity, some liquidity, right? Very short duration. And I think every year that goes by, you'll just, one of these, you know, you'll at some point where every dollar is making a dollar, you're going to be like, oh, no, that didn't take very long, did it? No, it didn't.
Yeah. I think so many people think that they lack the discipline to make something like this happen and the willpower and all that just to get through these years and let that capital accumulate and all that. But I bet if they were to look back in their life, they'd be able to find several occurrences of them actually delaying gratification and putting the work in up front so that they could be in a better position down the road. And maybe they went to college, you know, back when college meant something, you know, where, hey, I'm going to put in all this work up front where I'm spending money, not making money, so that I can create a better situation for myself for the rest of my life after that and make more money, you know, and just, again, that's maybe not the best example because I'm not such a proponent to thinking you need to go to college to make money. But everybody's done that. You know, when you were on a sports team, you would work out in the summer so you would be better during the sports season. You put in the work today so that you could have a better opportunities tomorrow. And that's exactly what this is. It's no different. You're just putting in the discipline today to have better opportunities tomorrow.
Brilliant. I love it.
One of my favorite quotes is, today I do what others won't so that tomorrow I can do what others can't.
Ooh, I love it.
And I think about that. I mean, I thought about that when I was doing all the stuff in the military and, you know, the academy and going through that pain just to get to, you know, to be able to do something pretty cool that others can't say they did. But it's the same with finances. Like, you know, pretty soon I could buy a house for cash. Not many people can say that. It doesn't mean not many people have the capability to do that, but they just didn't plan for it. They didn't do it in a way, they didn't prioritize their capital in a way that put them into a position to be able to do that for one reason or another.
I think, you know, our clients, you know, they had the ability to really see where the leaks were, the financial leaks. And I think this book and practicing IBC helps you see that. And of course, we can point it out during our sessions where you've got a leak over here, you get a leak over there, you could have done this. Where I have talked to people after the fact where they had this huge cash outlay, and I'm like, oh my goodness, we could have done this, and then you could have taken a policy loan and done that, and this would have been the result, right? You would have had all this death, but permanent, you know, this death benefit and all this stuff. And they're like, oh man, I didn't know. I was like, yeah, I know you didn't know it, but you know now for the next time, so you'll get it back.
Yeah, you can't do anything about the past, but you can control what you learn from it and do things differently going forward. So one of the other things that I've heard, actually just recently, I'm working with somebody right now, and what I've heard him say a couple times, and he's not the first person to tell me this, is, you know, I can't think of anything I really need the cash for or why I would ever use that cash value. You know, what would you say to somebody like that, Paul?
Well, I think they're too focused on, I think if you told them all the attributes and that it was some like secrets, you know, secret investment product, he'd be throwing money at it. but he's viewing it too much from a product standpoint is my guess. Like he probably doesn't like the fact that it's whole life insurance. So I think there's probably a way to show him that this is just cash flow or cash storage optimization. This is just a superior place to park capital because you are going to need it because the future is unknown. You have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. Your health could take a turn tomorrow, right? Your health could take a turn next year. You could have a child or a grandchild that gets sick. Who knows what's going to happen? We've talked about airline pilots losing their medical on this podcast. It happened, you know, overnight. Boom, went in for something, and all of a sudden, you're about to have a heart attack because you get like a major blockage or something, or you have cancer somewhere or whatever. So I think, I don't know. It's tough sometimes to get through to folks, but I think that might be the issue. He's product focused and instead of process focused. I think you need to focus on the process of banking. This is about banking, not about whole life insurance. This is why the title of the book is literally Becoming Your Own Banker, right? It's big red letters, banker right there. It's about banking, not life insurance, not about investments, not about rates of return. It's about how you finance the things of life. And he's going to have something to finance, weddings or something.
Right. You know, this kind of objection shows me somebody who's really maybe they haven't considered it, but maybe they're not even worried about the capitalization phase. Because it's not the cash value accumulation that would be their priority.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like I don't have a need for cash, so I can part with some of it in the early years to pay this premium and to start capitalizing. So,
or maybe we focus more on the estate, the death benefit aspect, because the cash value accumulation is not as important to me because I got plenty of cash flow right now to cover what I need. I don't see the need for it, but that was the same way I was, you know, for the first 6 years. I said, hey, I had no use for that cash. I knew I had a need. I knew inherently I need capital in life. Like I need money. That's just a fact. You can't escape it. You need money, but you may not have a use for it right now. That doesn't change the fact that you're going to need it. And that was me for the first 6 years. I didn't have a use for it, but I knew I would need it. And it turns out I did. You know, 6 years later, I was like, this is the perfect opportunity to use this cash value that I've accrued.
Yeah. And we've talked about it on past episodes, you know, how Dave changed careers, you know, left the Air Force, went corporate, flipped homes, flew through the airlines. Like he had like a bunch of different career changes in a very short amount of time. But having that access to liquidity, where he knew his money would keep growing, you know, allowed him to go do the things that God was telling him to go do, frankly. Like, hey, it's time to go leave the Air Force and go do something else. So
And from the outside looking in, it was pretty risky what I did, like left a cushy six-figure corporate job to go start my own business when I had three little kids at home and, you know, lose all the benefits of corporate America.
Right.
But what people didn't see was the capital I had accumulated and I had access to. I had over a year's worth of salary already in cash value by that point that my family wasn't going to struggle. I might struggle, but my family wasn't going to feel it because we've got the cash.
Yeah. Well, that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this is what I've observed. Nobody's been like, oh, these numbers are terrible, right? Nobody quits because the numbers don't work. They quit because they never fully committed to thinking about what they were actually doing, implementing the process of becoming their own banker. In other words, they had no idea what was going on, and therefore they didn't know what to do.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. It reminds me of, you know, what I think maybe Simon Sinek says and Start With Why. Like if your why is important enough, then you can handle all of those roadblocks and all of those difficult times because your why is important enough. Your why really needs to be, I want to create my own banking system. And this may come with, you know, there's going to be discipline involved. There's going to be, loss of some liquidity in the first few years. But I'm committed to being my own banker, having my own banking system, escaping the clutches of the traditional financial system out there that is likely not operating in my best interest, even though they call themselves fiduciaries. I love it. I mean, God bless my mom. I love her, but she likes to tell me how her advisor is a fiduciary.
Oh, like,
great.
we have a fiduciary responsibility as well as licensed agents. We do.
Yes.
Like too. This whole, like, I, you know, all these ads on these financial, like, oh, we're fiduciaries. That means, let me tell you something. I'm going to say this on this podcast. That means nothing to me.
It means nothing to me. It's like that Tommy Boy nothing. Quote. Well, you know, I could slap guarantee on the box, you know,
right.
The rest of that colorful quote. But I mean, what does a guarantee on a box really mean? Does that mean that product's going to work? No.
Yep. There's a long list of people with the fiduciary piece of paper because of their credentials that have screwed people. There's a long list of them.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in the interesting position of being really fiduciaries for the client and the insurance company.
Yeah. It's a very interesting position. You know, we are, we need to do what's best for the company, but also what's best for our clientele, which is also going to be what's best for us. All three people involved. That's what makes this great.
100%. Because when you get a policy, you're buying part of the company. You're an owner of the company. So, of course, you want us to act in the best interest of the company as well.
And we will, because we own that company.
Yeah. I own several policies, which means I own a decent amount, at least as an individual, a pretty good amount of that company.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, got a little off topic there, but it was
it's
just
good. We like to ad lib.
Yeah, ad libbing.
Here's what people don't think about early on in the infinite banking process. What it feels like to be on the other side of the capitalization phase. The people who stayed through that phase don't look back and think of it as a hard thing that they had to do. They don't. Oh, I survived the capitalization phase. They don't think that, right? They look back at it as a worthwhile endeavor that they're now thankful for doing. They look back at it as one of the most impactful financial decisions that they've ever made.
Yeah. So, you know, getting through that capitalization phase, it's not a, you know, there's no parade thrown for you when you get through that phase. You know, when you get to the other side of the chasm. You know, I use that term. That's pretty dramatic. It's not a chasm. You still have access to cash value. You can still finance the things of life. You got access to capital. It's just you don't have access to all of it yet. Right? But it's, yeah. Yeah, to, like, you know, to quote one of our favorite people, you're not eating beans and rice and making extra payments on your mortgage, you know, so that you can live like no one else. That's not what we're doing. Like, you're still enjoying life. You're living life. You're financing the things of life. You're just doing it at a smaller scale than you will be very soon. And every year you'll be able to do that on a bigger and bigger scale because you'll be controlling more and more of the banking function in your life as your equity builds within your policy, your cash value grows, and it continues to compound on itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget that you're buying a guaranteed life insurance contract. So if you walk out unexpectedly, it reminds me of a past episode, Dave, where I was flying home from somewhere and I was sitting next to this nice lady. She was a widow, but her husband walked out at age like 46, unexpected, like massive heart attack, just dead, left her with the kids. And, you know, she just asked me what I did. And I was like, I'm in the life insurance business. And, you know, it was just like, yeah, well, I went through this. And it just, there wasn't enough, right? They didn't, you know, a small term policy, people just don't think about it, right?
And it's right. Just, my employer gives me life insurance, I'm good. No, you're not, man.
It's like 1 year of your salary, maybe 2x your salary or something. That's nothing. Yeah. You need to give your family as long of a runway as possible. There was this runway in Poland where I was stationed there. That runway was 2.5 miles long. I was like, wow, that's a big runway. The small runway,
15,000 feet.
Yeah, yeah, it was a big one.
You usually only see runways that high at or that long at very high altitudes, but I don't think Poland is.
No, yeah, and Poland much, is
that's
not
sea it's, level, it's, basically. Probably
it's really a flat country, and yeah, not high above sea level at all. So, but yeah, it was a long one.
Yeah, well, so the way I see it, like the way your cash value, which is your equity, you know, is compounding uninterrupted because you're never actually touching it. You're just leveraging it,
yep,
right? To borrow the life insurance company's money. As time goes on, your borrowing power deepens. We talked about purchasing power, your borrowing power, because you can borrow more money from the insurance company. You know, things start to appear, these options, these opportunities that didn't exist before. It's almost like life insurance creates cash, but properly designed and optimally funded life insurance creates opportunities. It's kind of like, you know, you don't see a lot of that early on. You don't see the little changes, the little bit of compounding going on. And it's really like anything else. I think of it like if you want to, people who want to lose weight, or if you want to go, you know, build muscles in the gym. What you do today, you're not going to see the results at the end of the day. If you avoid right. eating pizza and you eat broccoli instead, at the end of the day, you're going to step on the scale. You're probably going to weigh the same. And you look in the mirror, you're not going to have bigger muscles. But
you might have some gas too. Broccoli. You
know, broccoli. Yeah. But if you do this day over day, you know, week over week, month over month, you know, maybe within a month, you'll start seeing a little difference in your body. But certainly a couple years down the road, you're going to run into somebody you haven't seen in a while, and they're going to barely recognize you. They're going to say, "Oh my gosh, Paul, look at you. You used to be a pencil yeah. neck. Now you're filling out the sleeves on that shirt like you're Hulk Hogan from No Holds Barred."
I think the shirt's just really tight. I don't know why they make them
it's
like this.
It's a medium.
It's a medium. It is a yeah. medium. You know, yeah. it's true. This is a totally unrelated story, but it goes with what you were saying. I was at my high school for like the Thanksgiving Day football game back in like, I don't know, probably the year 2000, 2001 probably. And there was this girl that comes up to me and she's like, "Hey, Paul." And I'm, you know, I'm like, I'm looking at her and I'm like, I have no idea who this woman is.
yeah.
She's like, "It's whatever." She, you know, said her name. And I was like, "Oh, well, this woman used to be like probably four bills." Ooh. And then she got like that gastro bypass surgery or whatever and was now completely normal. Like,
wow.
But looked yeah. like two different people. Like I literally did not recognize her. I had no idea who she was until she was like, "Hey, it's so-and-so." And I was like, "Oh my God." So yeah, it's.
That's the now, magic of that time.
It was time, you know, removed from school, but also the drastic change and how that yeah. person looked was just, I mean, it was day and night. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's exactly the way it is. You don't notice anything day to day. But over a period of time, just like we talked about last week, paying your mortgage every month, you know, over several years, you look back and, hey, you got a good chunk of equity you built up in your house.
Sure.
You know, along with the appreciation and the principal pay down, like it's actually sizable. It's the same thing with these policies. You go through that capitalization phase and you're just capitalizing. You're consistent. You're disciplined. You're doing it. And at some point you take a look and you're like, "Wow, that actually built up quite a bit. Look at this. Look what I built here." Pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels great. You know, it's a wonderful feeling. So if you're listening and you're in the early years, just keep going, right? Don't be afraid to capitalize, keep paying that premium. And gosh, you're going to have so many more opportunities and be in such a better position compared to what everyone else is doing. And you really will be. And they'll never realize it because you're not going to tell them probably, but you're really going to be because you're going to be like, "Oh man, thank God I did this."
Yeah. Yeah. And just like trying to lose weight or, you know, trying to get fit in the gym, you can't be asking, "Hey, what did this do for me today?" You know, if you step on the scale every single day, you know, what are you going to notice? Not much. It's probably going to be discouraging.
Right.
But give it time. The thing about this business, it's a business. You're starting a new business. It's guaranteed to be successful. That's the coolest thing. Like I've started many businesses, in the last 7, 8 years, 9 years that I've been kind of on an entrepreneur journey.
Yeah.
Not all of them did great. But it sure is nice to know that, oh, I've got 15 other businesses because I've got 15 other policies. Their small banking businesses altogether is one large banking business. And, you know, for me, it's a large banking business. It's successful. And it's guaranteed to only get more successful every single year. That's what I love about it.
Yep. And you didn't have to send out any update emails, get on any calls, talk to people and ask for capital. You didn't have to do any of that, right?
Didn't have to post none of that. Didn't have to put myself out there on Facebook and risk online haters
online
and trolls and online bullying and go cry in my room all alone. And
you remember that one dude at LinkedIn? He was some sort of financial advisor a couple of years back. I think he had like an Italian last name. I could picture his face. I don't know who he was, but he would just he thought he was destroying us or destroying you or whatever, but he was just showing everyone else what an ass he was.
Yeah. Kind of like that one hater we had. Well, I'm sure there's been plenty more than one, but one guy that just really went after us on YouTube. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, Astro Man, he wouldn't even use his real name. So that's when I'll call you out. Like, you know, if you're going to be a hater, use your real name. Don't hide.
Yeah. It's almost like the stupidest comments on social media come from the dumbest people. And, you know, if you can scrape in and see like their profile, it's always like a picture of their cat or some anime thing or some other weird crap. I don't know why that is, but that is what my detective work has produced is that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. No offense to anybody with a cat or likes anime. I'm just saying, like, it always seems to be just something.
It's like I talked to a couple people who are pretty normal dudes who watch anime, and they say, I love, like, it's great. You would actually like it, Dave. I'm like, I doubt it. And they're like, no, you would. Like, the storylines are great. They're not woke at all. It's like just very good storylines. I'm like, okay, interesting.
Hey,
I guess
to each his own. I just don't have the time to just add on anything into my.
Unless it's something I can do while I'm doing something else, I guess. But probably not going to do that. Yeah. Yeah. So I'd say the people who get through the capitalization phase, you know, it's not really about having patience. It's just about having clarity. People who had, again, that why. What is my why? Well, I want to control the banking function in my life. I want to control at least some of it. And I'll grow that as time goes on. I want to be able to make decisions from a position of strength. Like, those are the people who get through that, and it's not even an issue. You look back and you say, oh, that was no big deal. You know?
Yeah. There's also like these rewards that a lot of people either forget about from our coaching or they, whatever, but there's like rewards in the back end of this too, where, you know, long-term funding or intermediate term funding of the policy, right? Where maybe you had a cash flow change, but you're 13 years into your capitalization phase and all of a sudden you're like, uh-oh, something bad happened, something unforeseen, catastrophic, whatever. And all we do is change the dividend election to pay the base premium for you and some of the PUA. And your policy continues, and you still have your system that you've built, and it's going to get bigger and bigger every year still. So there's all these, like, God, it's just such a wonderful, wonderful product that does so many things and is, I don't want to say it, but it's risk-free. Like, it has no bad attributes. It has no downsides whatsoever.
As long as you've got a long-range mindset. And you decide this is going to be a part of my life, then the drawbacks, I really don't see the drawbacks, because you're always going to need access to capital for one thing or another. The seen and the unseen.
So Nelson Nash built this system for people who were willing to think differently, not just about the product of whole life insurance, but about time, about what it means to build something. It's about the difference between getting a return and creating a permanent system.
The capitalization phase is simply where you prove to yourself what kind of person you are. You know, do you believe in the process? Do you have a strong enough why? Do you want to become your own banker? It's where the concept either takes root or doesn't.
If you're in the early years right now and this episode gave you something to hold on to, please share it. There's someone in your circle who's quitting on this, and they just need someone to tell them what they're actually doing. Because like Nelson said, if you know what's going on, then you'll know what to do.
If you're not practicing the infinite banking concept in your own life just yet, and you want to understand and learn whether it's right for you, go to thewealthwarehousepodcast.com, watch the videos, see some links, take a course, and then after you read the book, Nelson Nash's Becoming Your Own Banker, the 5th edition, go ahead and schedule time with either Paul or me, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
And remember, click the like button, leave a comment, and subscribe to the podcast, and share this with somebody who's in their early years and starting to maybe have some doubt. This episode is for them.
And until next time, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.